The Numinous Podcast with Carmen Spaniola.
Hi there, and welcome to The Numinous Podcast, where we've been having interesting conversations with everyday folks about the mystery of life since 2014. I'm your host, Carmen Spaniola, joining you from the lands of the Lekwungen-speaking peoples, the Songhees and the Esquimalt First Nations, recently known as Victoria, BC, Canada. In this country we call Canada, we have a national Indigenous broadcaster called APTN. That stands for the Aboriginal Peoples Television Network. And it started in the 80s as regional programming for the North, and then it went national in the late 90s. So when my child was just a little wee one, I used to put on this kid's show called Teepee Tales, which was so calming. It was so great for the Gen X crowd of parents because it had this like old school puppet friendly giant Mr. Dress-Ups kind of vibe. And it was so calming, and it focused on the importance of things like friends and family and First Nations culture. It was just a great example of what Aboriginal People's Television Network, APTN, does so well. This broadcaster is on par with CBC, which I'm sure even Americans have probably heard of the CBC. So if you didn't know, we have this national Indigenous broadcaster. And I recently rediscovered APTN through its streaming service Lumi. So I got the service because I was introduced to today's guest through our mutual friend, Colette Barron-Reed. And so I've been binge watching the show. Well, also actually binge watching a show there called Indians and Aliens on the recommendation of a friend. Oh my God, so fascinating. So good to hear Indigenous elders talk about encounters with sky people and star people, which I've had the experience of an Indigenous elder talking to me about sky people. So anyway, that one I also really love. But my new comfort watch is a show called Spirit Talker, hosted by today's guest on the podcast, Sean Leonard. Sean is a medium. He connects with the spirits of recent ancestors, and the show depicts him traveling to different Indigenous communities across the land, hearing about their culture and spiritual teachings, and connecting them with their beloved dead. And along the way, he deepens his own connection to his Mi'kmaq heritage and the medicine of his Indigenous name, White Eagle Spirit Talker. Content note for this episode, we're talking about death, and sometimes they're tragic and sometimes they are accidental, and it can get a little bit graphic. So I just want you to be aware of that. If this is a subject that's kind of up for you and you're feeling sensitive to, this might not be your episode. It's mostly lovely and happy and reassuring, but of course we are talking about death, so take care of yourself. So, Sean, what identities do you lead with?
Well, what identities do I lead with? I'd say I'm an Indigenous psychic medium. And most people know what a psychic is, and some people know what a medium is as well. And you know, it's meshing those things together. I think all mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums. And I also like to say, this is a tough question, actually, because it's either I'm an Indigenous psychic medium or an Indigenous spirit talker. Which is pretty much the same thing. It's just in my culture, that's what I would be called, as a spirit talker as opposed to a psychic medium.
Okay. So for folks who aren't clear on the difference between a psychic and medium, I love how you say that. All mediums are psychics, not all psychics are mediums. So what is the distinguished difference there?
Yeah. When a psychic is somebody that you could meet that may read cards or do things or use numerology, et cetera, but they're literally like using that information to kind of help tune into you. And some people don't require any tools. They just are able to kind of tune into your vibration, your energy, and kind of get a sense of where you are in life. And through, you know, the psychic senses, you know, clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, clairinfusion, that you may be able to guide that person in life, you know, through what they've been through, maybe help them heal through some stuff and give them life guidance where they could potentially be going if they make some, you know, good choices. So that's really what a psychic is about, life guidance. And often, you know, because we're all connected. I mean, we're all energy, right? Wherever we are, you can do that, you know, in a large crowd if you focus your energy on one person, or you can do it via internet, you know, like Zoom or et cetera. Because again, we're all connected, right? So it's really about you just tuning into the vibration of a person. And when you tune into the vibration of a person, it could be their voice that you hear, It could be just the aura that you sense with them, whether it's through live in-person format or on a virtual format, but you're really tuning into the energy field within that person and guiding them accordingly. And you'll be able to like tune into like situations in life, maybe not just about them, but people that they're around. They could ask a question about their mom or their dad or their brother, sister, cousin, friend, whoever. But it's really about tuning into like life. And a medium is somebody that can do all those things. But predominantly, we work with spirit to give us messages that come to us that we validate. So when people come through, they might say a name, date, time, or sentence, et cetera, or a relation, how they passed. It's more about the validation of knowing who the person is. Once you've made that connection, then it's more about, how can this spirit help you to move through an aspect of life where you may be stuck? And it could be grief, and it could be something in life that you have regrets and et cetera. And it's really just working with that energy and trusting the messages that come from your spirit people, which are your ancestors and predominantly, the ones that have just currently passed, and then working with that. And then sometimes life guidance finds a way in there too.
Tell us about your clairs. You mentioned some of them. Maybe you'd like to define what you said. You said one clair infusion, something like that, that I hadn't heard before. Tell us about the clairs that are most predominant for you, particularly when you are reading a crowd, because as a medium, you will have sometimes crowds. We see this on the first season of Spirit Talker. And I mean, I imagine it's just a lot of energy and it could come through in a lot of different ways. So, what are your predominant clairs? How does it come through for you in different situations?
Well, it's different times, different clairs have different strengths, I guess. I mean, sometimes I'm very clairaudient. And through clairaudient, that means that I hear spirit. And it's not like I hear them rambling on like big paragraphs and sentences or anything like that. It's literally just little mental thoughts that come into my brain. And it would be name, date, time, or at sometimes a sentence. And I just work with that as it flows. And I find when you're working with the clairs like clairaudience, that, when, because I don't always know where I'm going, right? We're the middle people. We're literally just the people just listening, paying attention, and trusting. And they might say, Joan, Joan and Victor and Simon, et cetera. And then as but I didn't know I was going to say Simon or Victor. I just heard June first. But what I find is when you start to step into clairaudience and you start to trust the messages as they come to you, I feel like as you trust, more comes. And it's really like I may say, okay, I feel like I have like John here feels like a dad figure to me. And he's a kind of heavy set fellow. He had a bad knee and maybe walked with a little bit of a gated walk. So that's clairvoyance. But also it started with the name. So one clair can lead to another. So it's really about just honoring how the energy comes to you and understanding the distinct languages, right? So the distinct languages and knowing that, if you hear a name in your mind, that voice, that thought, that mental thought that comes to you, means something. And it could mean, and it doesn't mean that they've passed away as well. It could be somebody in your life. It could be your dad. It could be your brother, sister, cousin, friend. I mean, it could be somebody that they want to talk about. And this is where the medium, you have to surrender to the process and just trust where they take you. And I mean, sometimes, people come in with expectations thinking, I wanted to talk to, Aunt Bessie Sue and Uncle Tom and, my little brother John that died when he was young. And it doesn't always work out that way. Sylvia shows up first, and then Sylvia brings in John and Joe and everybody. And you didn't expect to hear from Sylvia. But you again, it's more important about not analyzing, but just trusting the process. And through clairaudience, clairvoyance, et cetera. And for me, I find it very clairaudient. And when I'm doing live stage presentations, particularly, sometimes I find it more clairvoyant. Like I will get things very clairvoyantly, like very distinct. And to give you an example of what clairvoyance is like, I was just at the I Can Do It conference, which I was supposed to do with call up Erin Reed, and unfortunately she had broken her foot and she wasn't able to attend, and which kind of saddened me because I was really looking forward to kind of doing that with her and John Holland, us sharing the stage. And so anyway, it was just me and John. So we had 2 hours between the two of us, and we kind of did it. We split the time up. We did a little question and answer at first, but it was one of the last readings that come through. And what came through, what I found was very, very kind of interesting because it's something unique that gets my attention. It's not the randomness of the chaos of the what you feel like you're being overwhelmed by all the messages of people. And I don't even know how they select who's going to be coming through and et cetera, but somebody obviously is drawing numbers over there and go, okay, you've won the Sean Leonard lottery. You'll be talking to your loved ones today. So anyway, this person shows up and it feels like a man to me. So this is the clairaudience. It feels like there's a male figure here. And it feels like a dad, like a father figure. And the next thing I see is an explosion. But the explosion I see is a propane tank, and it's a fairly large propane tank, and it just like exploded. And I knew that they lost their life in the explosion. And nobody was standing up. And I kind of sense over to the left of the audience, and one girl's kind of putting up her hand. I'm like, I know this is for you, so you might as well just stand up. So she stands up and she goes, well, yeah, my stepdad died by propane tank explosion. Like, I mean, and so why didn't you stand up sooner? Like, why did you not think? I mean, nobody else is putting their hand up.
Yeah,
You know,
it's
this is
totally
so unique,
unique.
right? This is obviously for you. And she goes, but it wasn't really my, it was a woman. I'm like, a woman. And this is where it threw me for a loop, right? Because this is where I'm trusting what comes through. I know it felt like a man, and it felt like you know, he was doing some work around the propane tanks, et cetera, and it felt like a stepdad. And I said, but she says, you know what? I called her my stepdad. I called her my stepdad. And I said, and then I vibed out the person one more time. And I said, this really feels like a man to me. And she goes, she was very masculine. Hence calling her my stepdad. She was literally my stepdad. It was my mother-in-law, but she was like my father figure, and she had very masculine energy. So this is where I say, like, of course she does, you know. But you know, I didn't know that at the beginning, but you have to kind of just step into it and trust it, and it unfolds. And that's how the clairs kind of like let you know who it's for. And it was like, you know, another aspect that I'm really usually pretty profound at is the sense of, you know, the messages that come through clairaudience. I mean, they were pretty, the person that I connected was kind of funny actually. And, you know, despite the heaviness of how they passed, the first thing they said to me is like, oh, I'm not too upset about how I passed. Just, you know, I went out with a bang. I'm like, and I, you know, I never suffered at all. I was like literally here. And I was like, blink, I was on the other side. And I was like, wow, that's pretty profound. Everybody laughs, you know, cause you know, spirit can have a sense of humor. And what also I'm very good at in the sense is feeling, clairsentience, sensing, feeling with on my body. And there's information that can be garnished from that. So when a spirit's connecting to me, now I'm starting to feel this part of my scalp, like just a part right here. And I didn't know what they meant, but I know I could really feel like pressure on that part of my head. And I asked the lady, because I don't know, I'm just the middleman. Did this person pass away? And was the impact predominantly right here? Because I feel this part of my head. And she goes, I hate to be graphic, but the only thing left of my stepdad was that part of her head.
Oh my gosh.
That was the only remains that we had left. And I'm like, okay, then why would they tell me that? Well, one, at least they had something to, you know, bury, cremate, honor. They had something to have in regards to placing, you know, in a space. And that's important to a lot of people. And there's so many people out there that struggle in different ways because of maybe missing someone, you know, because they've never found the remains or found the body, or they're lost at sea, et cetera, or were never found. And that's like, you know, sometimes even if it's not what you expect, it's still a gift. And again, you know, she reiterated, or he reiterated, he, she, you know, that they did not suffer, and you know, that they, you know, very happy with the service and how they honored her, et cetera. And it was a really good reading. And then at the end, you know, she said something to the extent that, and this is now finishes with clairaudience. She says, because John connects, we were doing something very unique where he would go out and do a connection for a little while, and he goes, okay, Sean, close it off. So I had to
Oh,
tune in because we were sharing a reading. I opened
I
it,
was
I
wondering how
connected.
you would do that.
Well, you can, as if people who are, and a lot of people do it actually. I think when you're watching a live show or you're in the audience and you can see the medium or psychic tuning into somebody, you know, there's a lot of sensitive people in the audience. I bet you there's a lot of people out there that are receiving information themselves about the
Mm-hmm.
person that I'm speaking to, or John Holland, or call it Baron Reed, or whoever's speaking to, right? That you may be going, you might get something psychically in relation to them. And then that the person who's on stage might bring it up and you go, oh, I was seeing that, you know? And it's because it's universal energy that is there that we can kind of tune into if we focus our awareness and attention. And at the end, she said, you know, I know you've been going through a really tough time in the last 2 months, and you've been talking to me in the spirit world. I want you to know I hear you and everything you've said. And I am with you, and I am helping you through this. Even if you don't know I'm there, I am there helping you. And she literally broke down at the end and said, you know, that was worth the trip here just to hear that. And it's what she, you know, what the spirit really needed to say to her. And it was just boiled down to like a couple sentences. But you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that couple sentences, because if I just said, well, I have somebody here that says that, then you might like, well, who is that? How do you validate that? How do you know who this is? And that's why all that other stuff kind of unfolds in that way. It's there's messages to be had, again, the loss, the burial, et cetera, but there's still information, you know, throughout. But sometimes it takes like that closing message to really, you know, have that where it hits home to that person really strongly.
What we see on your show, Spirit Talker, so often is you spend the first few minutes validating. It's like spirit is trying to demonstrate this is legit, this is for you. And you have quite a punchy cadence where you're like, is it, you know, a father figure, yes or no? Is the name yes or no? And very often you will say things that, of course, we always want some evidence that nobody else could know, but you've even described people's dreams and that you can see the shock on their faces because they can't believe that you, it's not only something that couldn't have been hearsay, but that they, you know, has happened within their own dream time. And it's almost like, you know, spirit needs to reassure, or maybe you need to reassure. I'm curious about like what that process, that collaboration with the spirits is about how you help somebody let down their guard so that they can receive the healing message. Like, how often are you asking spirit, give me more, because I can feel this person's a bit resistant.
Well, I don't really say give me more. They just give me more.
Okay.
The more I listen, the more that comes. And eventually I feel like they finish, right? I just feel like you know, that they will give me information I validate, information I validate. Because again, if I don't, and sometimes they'll tell me like two things at once or three things at once. I'm like, okay, you got to stop now. You'll hear me talking to them even just say, okay, give me some time. I haven't even talked about these other two things yet. So it's more about just being clear with them. I know and I mean, they're people, you know, they're people in spirit world. They're eager and excited to talk to their loved one too, just as much as you are to, you know, and vice versa, right? So it's really just working with the energy as it comes. And I don't know what's going to come. I never really know. It unfolds. And if they take me to a dream and they show me an image, that's what I describe. And then I validate. And again, because maybe that's what that person needs, to know without a doubt that this is my mom, this is my dad, this is my son, you know. And I love that process. And once we've gotten through, we know this is the person. Well, what do you have to say now? What's that closing message that you really need to bring home to this person? And it could be just, you know, whatever you did with my remains. It could be, you know, that, you know, there's quarrels going on with the family. It's life guidance. You know, they see us in life. They know our pains. They see us. They feel us. They know how we struggle. So they try to help guide us so that we can live a greater, better life that is more like, you know, higher level energy, where we're more connected to spirit rather than being bogged down with all the hardships of life and hardships of loss.
When you were young, you describe in your book that you had a spirit guide named Sam.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wonder if, since now you're an adult, like who was Sam when he was incarnate? Did you ever explore that? Like, why do you think Sam came to help you? You didn't describe him as like a family member or anything. So who do you think he was? Why do you think he came for you to you at that time? And what's your relationship with him now?
Well, I think we all have many guides. And I have a belief now. My understanding of spirit guides have kind of changed, and I may write about this in the future. But because what has happened through the years is when I was young, I had a very strong connection to one of my spirit guides named Samuel, Sam, and he'd be with me and I was playing with me and I knew he was around and then eventually he left me and I was like horrified because I was like, where did my best friend go? I absolutely loved playing with him, talking to him, and spending time with him. And when he left, I remember the moment very clearly where he stepped into the light and I felt alone.
How
But
old
he
were
did
you?
tell me, I was probably about 4 or 5 years old, maybe in that range. I can't be 100% certain because I wasn't keeping track of age at that point in my life. But I would say it's probably about 4 to 5 years old. I wasn't in school yet. And there was a big reason as to why he had to kind of step off and not be as greatly connected as it was, is because I have to live life. I mean, if I go to school and I got an imaginary friend, and I'm sitting there talking to my imaginary friend on the slide, it's probably going to cause me some issues with some of the other boys. I'm not going to live like a social life with living people. I'm going to be like walking around with spirits all the time, and people are going to think I'm nuts even back then, right? Probably could even be put on medication if it kept going, depending on what teachers or other people would say, right? So I think it's very normal for our guides to be with us when we're young, and that at some point they need to kind of give us space to be within the world. It doesn't mean they're not helping you, guiding you, or supporting you on that journey. But in regards to past lives, like I feel like I've lived a life with them before, and I'm not 100% sure where I am not. I feel like I might have been in a life in southern France, but I'm not certain. He's never said, "Hey, Sean, we had this life together," and so I don't know. But I do feel like I've known him for more than this one lifetime, and I do feel like we have soul family. And our soul family, is some of the people that come into this life, physical life, but some of our soul family doesn't actually incarnate into life. And they have different roles and purposes on the other side. And some of those may be to be a spirit guide. But I feel like when you pick your guide, even right before you're even born, you pick your guides because, they know your life purpose. They know your theme, your purpose. They know your chart that has been kind of pre-written in regards to like who this person you're meant to become. And you would pick somebody or many people who would be in alignment with you becoming this person. They would have knowledge or wisdom or experience, because it'd be like, you wouldn't hire a plumber to do your building your house. You get them to do the plumbing in the house. So you'd want to have somebody that is like specializes in a particular job. And at an early stage of life, and again, this is something that I've started to understand from spirit, and there's a reason for this. I feel like we have probably up to four spirit guides, and I feel that at different stages of life, depending what stage of life you are at, one will make them, like you'll be born with one. Doesn't mean they leave you. But a new spirit guide will join the team, let's say, or you'll become aware that they're there. And it was like in my early years, and according to Indigenous culture, there's four stages of life. We start off in the four directions, which is the east, and it's the infancy, the infancy part of life. And then you move into the youth aspect of life. Then you move into a adulthood, and then you move into the elder aspect of life. And then we make your journey home eventually, and maybe even come back and do it all over again. Who knows? But I feel at the different stages of life, depending on what you're learning, what you're growing through, where you are in your chart, because some people get off track, right? So you wouldn't have a guide that's going to come and help you be a psychic medium or help you to work with the spirit world if I didn't choose to do that. If I because if we still have free will, like nobody's like they're guiding you, but they're not forcing you. And sometimes the guidance is a little bit more stronger than others, and sometimes it's subtle, and sometimes we take on extra karma. I feel like we still co-create our life, but we still have a big hand in creating the life that we live. But I feel like they guide us to the right people, the right situations, the right circumstances, the right knowledge. And that as that unfolds in your life, then you become the person that you had envisioned. And when Victoria came in, which was in my younger years, right? And let's call that in my youth to adult years. And then recently, in the last 3 years, I've become aware of a new guide. And I've only learned about her. I've met her twice in dreams. And I knew she was one of my guides, but she hasn't told me her name. Now, this is the cool part because I had some people over and I was doing like a spirit gathering. Like I was, because some producers were thinking about having me do another TV show where I would focus on crimes and unsolved stories. So one of them had to do with a Bitcoin billionaire that disappeared or with a bunch of people's money. So anyway, I was going to connect to him, and his name was Gerald Cotton. And I wanted to connect to him and see if, because I believe he may have faked his death and disappeared. And I mean, because right around they were investigating him, he went down to India very quickly on a very quick trip and died and come back in a box, and nobody really seen the body, except, you know, some people say they do, but I think they're in on it, to tell you the truth. But nobody really knows, but I don't feel like he's passed away. So I was trying to tune into him to see if I could get any messages or connect to him just to validate he was actually in the spirit world. And I didn't. But what it did happen was I recorded Sam talking to Victoria, to one of my other guides. And I now know her name because they both called her by the same name, but they both had a bit of a different accent when they spoke to her. And when I heard the name, I was like, oh my God, that's her. Now I know who she is, because I heard Sam saying, talking to somebody named Eliza. And then I heard Victoria saying Eliza. So I was like, okay, well, apparently I have a new guide. Well, I knew I had a new guide, but I didn't know who she was until now. And I kind of like psychically remembered that it what this is her. And so I feel like this next stage of life, which started about 3 years ago, you know, that I started, you know, writing and wrote a book and, you know, got signed with Hayhoe. So I'm now in a kind of a different platform at that point. You know, I already had a TV show and stuff like that, but maybe she was already there during the TV show and I just didn't know. But I feel like maybe her role is to kind of help me engage in the work that I'm doing as I move forward. And so that's what I feel. And I feel we have different guides that come at different stages of life. And I'm just hoping to make it to my elder years to, again, you know, continue that teaching and learn who that last guide possibly could be. But I won't know until I get there, and hopefully I get there.
When you say you recorded them having a conversation, was that you channeling, or did you record like paranormal voices, spirit box
Well,
style?
this is, I use a digital recorder. So a lot of the times when I do sessions, or if I'm out in different places, I actually have all kinds of recordings of spirits. It's not unnormal for me to record spirits saying things to me. It's very normal to me. And what I find weird is other people don't hear them.
So when they're hearing the recording, can they hear them, or you can still only hear? Oh, they can. Oh, interesting.
It has to be a vibrational thing. I always joke that I'm getting older and I have more hair in my ears because I'm a man. That's just a joke. But who knows? There might be some truth to it.
Okay,
I
so
don't.
you actually are like you're hearing them, and people don't hear them in the moment, but you've got it recorded, and then afterwards, and they can hear the conversation happening.
Not all the time, but a lot of times, yes. A lot of the times, because when I'm doing something spiritually somewhere, you know, let's say I'm going to vibe at a location, I may actually get the spirit that was there or previously connected there speaking to me. So if I hear them and I say, I mean, and this is where I like to kind of prove to people I'm not crazy. I'm not a psychic ventriloquist. That's what I say. I'm not a psychic ventriloquist. I'm not like making, you know, strange noises in my head that are coming out and being recorded on a digital recorder. There's something there. I'm recording it and it's responding to some of the questions or things that I ask. And occasionally I'll pick up Victoria, or I'll pick up Sam, or I'll pick up. And when I used to do sessions, I'd always tell people when I did the sessions, when I used to do one-on-one sessions, because I would record all my sessions and I tell the people I recorded, I give them a copy immediately. Go home and listen to it, because you might actually hear the person that you love in the background somewhere. And many times I did, many times I did. I'd get an email back and somebody says, oh my God, I can hear my son. I heard my
That's sweet.
son. I heard him talking to you. And I'll give you an example. And sometimes it's not like super big sentences, it's just a word or something. But I remember once there was a couple that came to me, and unfortunately their son was murdered. And they come for a session with their other son. And I was tuning into him and talking to him. He said a few things, like he talked about, I thought it was really weird. He told me about Yoshi and Yogi, and I thought, okay, well, this is kind of odd. Isn't that like Super Mario or something? It's like, I know it's like pertains to some game. And she goes, oh my God, those are our dogs that are passed, Yoshi and Yogi. And then he kept showing me like a tattoo, right? And then I was trying to kind of tune into what he was trying to tell me about the tattoo. And then I said, he's telling me about a tattoo. But just before I said it, you could hear him in the background going, tattoo, tattoo.
Wow.
Yeah, whispering it, like kind of like this, exactly like that. And it was in her son's voice. And I heard it faintly. And I said, I think I might have heard something. You should go and check it. And so they went and listened. And sure enough, they went home and listened, and they could hear the spirit saying it to me.
Oh, that gives me chills. I love watching things like that. You also said, tell me more about what you said earlier. When we choose our guides, I would love to know. I think many people, myself included, would think, oh, the guides are choosing me or they're coming to me. I don't have a ton of agency in that. Tell me more about what you believe that before we incarnate, we've chosen our guides.
Because I mean, you don't just show up randomly and go, okay, well, throw me into any life and, allow me to whatever I'm meant to be, I'll be. I mean, just it's not that random. It's a thought out process. You calculate, you talk about your parents, you talk about your siblings, your friends, your situations, your struggles, and the things that you're meant to learn through life. And even prior to even coming here, there's like I do believe that there's like a council on the other side to kind of help align you with the perfect guide for based upon what you're meant to learn or what you're meant to go through. They'll make suggestions. I don't think it's like, okay, well, you have to go with this guy, but I think it's more that you kind of choose each other. And I feel the people that are guiding us on the other side are learning from our experience. They're learning from how we approach things. They learn, one, how to guide us to do the things that we've wanted or signed up to do in regards to our life chart, but they're also learning from our choices and about the human experience even greater. Because I feel like all guides have lived lives before. I don't think that you could be a spirit guide unless you've lived probably many, many lifetimes at different times, learning very similar things as to what I wanted to learn in this lifetime. And I think that they're part of your greater soul tribe. Like and I've heard a lot of people speak about this, where they've had near-death experiences. And if you ever hear the stories about people that have, made the journey home and have come back, that often there's like, they meet their loved ones, but sometimes there's people there that they don't quite know, but they feel like that they're individual angels or spirit guides, and they're helping them through the life review. They're showing them different things and telling them about their purpose. How would they know all that, and why would they be designated that job? It's because they know you, and that is their job, is to be there to greet you, bring you home, and help you adjust, and then bring you to your loved ones, or help maybe see aspects of your life that you could have maybe did greater in. Because not everybody's gonna like come here and just like hit a home run. I mean, we're gonna make some bad choices. We're gonna like wish we couldn't have done didn't that things. And there's a lot of things we made other people feel, because I feel like future lifetimes, because I feel like we all have the chance to live more lifetimes, whether it's in this world or future worlds, that will take into consideration where we feel maybe we missed the mark on some stuff, and maybe place it upon future lifetime experiences that maybe we'll test ourselves again or try again to see if we can overcome that obstacle that we weren't able to last time.
Maybe make some repair. One of the experiences that I had, so my first career, my first modality was doing past life regression, even before I became a clinical hypnotherapist. And, there are some regressions that I did while I was like working with my teacher that are so profound. And there was one that I experienced. This would have been like 20 years ago. And the key thing I came away with was, long story short, in some colonial space, maybe colonizing South America somewhere, I was a woman who falsely accused an indigenous person of rape.
Okay.
And the village was becoming swarmed with the colonists who were decimating, committing genocide against these indigenous folks. And I was on a boat, like a Christopher Columbus type boat. And
Okay.
the key thing I came away with at that time, there hadn't been the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada. There hadn't been those things. And so I didn't have awareness of my own whiteness and whiteness as an identity and supremacy and all that at the time. So when I was like, tell me about my life purpose, let's go into this past life regression, I came out of it and was like, oh, I have debt. Like, what is that about? This is
Right.
not the kind of like illustrious, like your successful lifetime that I was like hoping to
No.
have. And I couldn't understand how it was going to apply to me. Now looking back, I think, oh yeah, no, that's a fundamental orientation that I have in my life that I wasn't able to articulate. I didn't have the consciousness at that time, but it was such a perfect example of like, oh yeah, no, I've taken that on as like a very important part of my life purpose, but I feel that it actually originates in a much earlier lifetime, and it feels good to be making repair in that kind of way as much as I can. I would love to know more about how your gifts and skills came to you almost as a prophecy when you were very young. You're a teenager, 16, 15, 16. You experienced the very sudden shock of your dad's death. It must have been very shocking and surprising. He was only like 45 or something. So
42, yeah.
42. Oh my God. So will you share a little bit about what happened and the prophecy he shared with you about your path?
Well, when my father passed, obviously it was very difficult, and I remember the day very, very clearly. Very early in the morning, my mom came to wake me up. I had to go out and, resuscitate my dad. And, for whatever reason, he was invisible. I mean, I think it's kind of crazy to even think about today that I couldn't see him. And I kept going inside saying, Mom, are you sure that he's passed away? I mean, you sure he's like out in the driveway? Because, he's not there. I've walked around his whole truck. It was running. The door was open. The exhaust was going. And I did not see my father. And my mom says, go out again, he's there. And I went out again, and nowhere. I'm like looking around, look beside the door. And for the life of me, it was just so puzzling. So I had to go back inside. My mom grabbed me, brought me outside, and literally pointed me at my father. And for whatever reason, I don't know how, I must have, like, he was literally invisible to me. I would have walked through him. That's how strange it was. He was not there. And I performed CPR and, tried to resuscitate him. But I knew, when I was working with my father that he was gone. And he had a massive heart attack. He was like in the Navy. He was, he drank occasionally. He didn't eat so good. He smoked. He didn't take very good care of himself in some ways. But that was the kind of mentality and of that genre of that time, I guess, and how he did things. I mean, I remember every weekend cooking bacon and eggs with, taking the bacon fat, pouring over the eggs, for God's sakes. If you do that today, you're like, what the hell are you
Yes.
doing? Right. But it was a year later that I had a visitation from him where I was sleeping in my mom's rec room on the couch. And I woke about, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And when I woke up, there was a light, just a ball of light at the end of the room. And I saw the light and it just got brighter and bigger. And I stepped up off the couch. And as I stepped off the couch, I could literally see myself still sleeping. And what the heck is going on? And then I thought for a moment that I might be dying, and that I was leaving this world. Because when I saw the light, it just felt like unconditional love. I don't know how else to describe it. It was just the purest, brightest, whitest light I've ever seen. And it just felt like home. And all I could think about was moving into it. And just as the light got large enough, my dad walked out of it. And my dad, again, the hunter, the fisher, the smoker, the military guy, comes out with a long white robe on. Like, my first thought is like, oh my God, Dad, you're alive, but what the hell are you wearing? I was so surprised by what he was wearing. He goes, oh, don't worry, we all wear stuff like this over here. I'm like, okay, you'll get used to it. I'm like, okay. And so my dad, I was like, again, and it was, and you know, even though I was elated for that moment, I shifted to anger very quickly. And I was angry at him. And I said, Dad, you know, where are you? What, you know, like, where did you go, et cetera? And he's like, well, you know, I made my journey home, and he said it was my time to go home to the spirit world, and we all have a time to be here and a time to go home, and you won't understand this, but it was my time to move into the light again and go home. I'm like, what? And he says, you're not going to remember this, but we made this plan before you or I were born. Like, what? Are you sure? Like, why would we make a plan that you would die and leave my life, my mom's life, my brother's life? That doesn't make any sense. He goes, you'll understand it one day. He says, I've come here to tell you a few messages. You got to tell your mom I'm okay. You got to tell your brother I'm okay. And that I made it home, that I am where I'm supposed to be. And I said, yeah, I will absolutely will. And all I could think about, even though my dad was talking to me, was walking around him into the light. And my dad said, no, you're not going in here. And I tried to literally walk by him. And it was like I was touching him in the light, but I couldn't get into it. I could feel it on my body. I could feel it in my spirit. And again, it felt like home. And I realized that this space and place that we live in is not reality. This is not real. This is like some fake drama play that I'm living. And I'm only here for a short time, and this is my real home, and this is where I belong, this is where I come from, and where we're all going to return to. And my dad said, no, he says, you can't go here. If you come here, you're not going to want to come back. And I'm like, no, I'll come back. And I knew I was lying, because I was thinking in my head, like, if I could get Myers in there, there's no way you're getting me out of here. That's because it felt so good. And then he showed me what it would look like for my mom. And I felt all of her pain. And it was very overwhelming. Very overwhelming. My mom was already grieving for very heavy for a year. And I think if I was to leave at that time, it'd be another at least 7 years that my mom would grieve like hard. And it would be no, not a bright, happy time for her through that at all. And then I felt what it would be like with for my brother. And you know, mind you, he wouldn't grieve me as hard as my mom would. But even after feeling that, I said, you know what? That's okay. They'll be well. They're going to come home with us one day. So it doesn't matter how much suffering that they experience. They'll escape it. They'll eventually come home. They'll endure it, and we'll all be together. So it's okay. And my dad said, no, that's not your purpose. You've come here, and this is the reason why I left your life. He said, I've left this world so I could be the one to show you the light. And you need to remember this light. You need to remember it. You have to remember what it feels like, what it looks like. And he says, one day you're going to be helping people, and you don't know this yet, but it's part of this. It's part of helping people know where we go and where we come from. And then you're going to be bridging this world. And I was like, okay, this sounds like gibberish, because I'm 16, right? And that was it. He touched me on the forehead. I woke up on the couch, and I was just like, wow. And I cried, and I remember getting up to tell my mom, you know, about the visitation. It wasn't a dream; it was a visitation, very profoundly different. And when I told my mom, I was thinking that she was like super stoked, you know, really happy. Oh my God, Dad's okay, right? No, she was pissed off. She said, why the hell did he come to you and not me? You know, does he not know how hard I'm going through in life? And I'm like, well, and I understand this differently now, because I couldn't answer her really back then either. But I feel, you know, she was, you know, we, you know, grief has a purpose too. You know, there's a process of healing that takes people different amounts of time, just like what I felt for my brother. And, you know, there is no quick fix. You know, it's not like, okay, well, now that I've told mom that I've seen dad, that she's going to be well. Even if you go to a medium or spirit talker, it's not like a quick fix. You still got a journey. It's just a little assistance to help you on that journey, you know, to continue going through life, knowing that they're with you and around you, and they love you, and that you have validation of that. And So I feel like my mom did eventually have a visitation with my dad, but it was probably like 3 years later or something. But she was in a different place at her grief at that time. And maybe she needed to get there before he could connect, right? Because I mean, grief comes with a heaviness, right? It's a heaviness, and when you're making spirit connection, you kind of gotta lift your spirits a bit. You gotta lift your energy, and I feel like maybe I was a little bit more closer to that space than she was.
How's your family now? Like, what does your brother think of your work? What does your mom think
Oh.
of your work? Especially you're well known for it now.
Oh, my mom loves my work, and she comes to some of my shows if she can, and she's read my book. She talks about my book to everyone, and people come to her. Now she's kind of famous because it's kind of silly, really. But she has people reaching out to her that she wouldn't normally hear reaching out to her. It's like, oh my God, I'm seeing your son, right? And she's like, yeah. She's well, maybe you could get me to see him, right? Like if his mom doesn't have a connection, how because I. I'm so busy and with everything, and some people aren't even looking for my mom to get in to see me, for God's sakes. But it's normal. I mean, my mom grew, she raised me, so she knows how sensitive in tune I was, and how much I struggled in different ways, like emotionally because of like losing my father in life, etc. And also how spiritually connected I was, and I wouldn't say in a psychic way, but I did know a lot of things that people shouldn't know. And we argued a lot because I knew things that I shouldn't know.
I
But
love to. Sorry, go ahead.
yeah, that was it. It was just part of the fun of growing up, right?
You mentioned earlier France, the draw to France. I share this
Yeah.
draw, this compulsion, this allure with you.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about stuff that comes up in your book around like Gnosticism, why that appeals to you, and about your pilgrimage that you made to France to learn more about the Cathars and your past life connection. My experience of going to the south of France was I was kind of halfway through the pilgrimage before I realized like, oh, I'm on the pilgrimage to Mary Magdalene.
Okay.
But we had a really unusual thing happened at Montségur. So you talk about the Cathars and the citadel at Montségur, and that was where one of the wildest things happened to me that reminds me of the story of your dad. As you
Right.
know, there's one path up, one path down. Very steep, very narrow. You can see from the top the parking lot. You can see every person along the way, one way in, one way out. I was there with my husband and my child, who at the time was like 11. And somehow we got separated, but I was sitting right inside at the door. Like there's one door in and one door out. And my husband and kiddo went walking. They went walking around the outside. They came back through and went back down the trail. I did not move the whole time. I had been listening to a tour guide talking about the Cathars with the siege of Montségur and how they'd spent a whole winter like trying to survive there. And they made it through spring. And then, as you say in your book, finally they went down, they walked into the Belton fire. We happened to be recording this interview around the same time of year.
Yeah.
I eventually was like, where's my family? God, it had been 2 hours and I could not find them anywhere. I was like, okay, I did a loop. They were nowhere. I walked down to the parking lot and they were like, where were you? We've been waiting for you for like over an hour, like 90 minutes. And I was like, no. I was right at the door. I was right there. And they were like, no, you weren't, because we did the loop. We came right back. We couldn't find you. We looked around. You know, it's pretty small. And I was like invisible to them. Like I
Right.
was in like a space-time vortex, and we could not figure out how it could have possibly happened, because they would have had to practically brush past me. And I was shocked to discover it was 2 hours. It felt like
Wow.
maybe 30 minutes or something like that. So
Right.
I was fascinated with this part of your book, because I was like, yeah, weird shit goes down at Montségur, I have to say. So tell me about your draw to Gnosticism and the Cathars, and what you think your connection to ancient France is.
Well, way back in the day, when I was exploring my spirituality, I was, there was a lady that I saw on TV named Sylvia Brown. And she had a church that was like called Nova Spiritus. And it was like a very, it was centered around Gnostic Christianity. And I was really kind of drawn to it. And I didn't know why. I just felt like I wanted to explore this. And I actually even studied back then to be a minister in her church. And I did a couple like talks at a Calgary aspect of it. But, after a very short time, which I'm very grateful for being there, I realized this place wasn't for me. This is not my journey. It's part of my journey. And one of the things that I learned there was about regression, past life regression and such. And it was part of the, I had to take a past life regression session training. And one of the guys there was a hypnotist. Like his name was Ian Wilson. I think in the book I called him something else because I changed people's names sometimes. But his name was Ian Wilson. He's a really nice guy, and he was like kind of the head minister of that area. And he did a group regression with, maybe 30, 35 people. It was a very small group. And I was there with my ex-wife, now ex-wife. And we were in the group, and he did a talk about past lives. And, and he said, "We're going to do a group regression." I was like, "Okay, well, I've never been regressed before. And this is my first experience." So in the experience, we do an induction of relaxation, and then he just says, "Just go wherever you feel comfortable. Just let yourself go, and just whatever unfolds, just observe." Because it is a group regression, it's kind of harder to kind of guide. But I kind of don't remember what he said after that, because it was like in a moment, I was like literally standing in the 1200s in southern France, and I'm standing in this field, and I'm wearing long boots, and I've got like a dirty pirate puffy shirt on. I've got a rake or some type of hand tool in my hand that I'm working in the soil. I see some buildings that are beside me, and I see a guy in there that looks like he's a blacksmith, and he's kind of heavy set fellow with an apron. He's like hammering on some sparks are flying, and I know I'm a farmer. Nobody like important, of significance. And I look behind me, and there's a castle. And I'm like, okay, I'm making this stuff up. This is like, now I'm like I'm soon I'm going to be like a prince, prince or something like this. This is ridiculous, right? And so I observe, I'm in like a little valley, and behind me is the castle. The buildings are on the right, and I look up over the other side, and there's a zigzag road coming down from the hill, like a back and forth, switchback. And it's a bit far off, but I can see in the distance something very white, and I'm looking at it as I'm working in the field, and it's definitely a horse, a pure white horse. And on the horse is a lady dressed all in white, and she has long blonde hair, and she's a very good horse rider. She's riding bareback, and she rides up to me, and she's got like there's a something like a stirrup or something around the mouthpiece, because I don't know anything about riding horses, to tell you the truth. But she just has that, and she pulls up to me, and she kind of stops, and she giggles, and I'm like, in my mind I'm thinking, wow, this person's really clean. She probably is a princess or somebody, and I'm a farmer, and the last thing I need to do is get killed for looking at some princess. And she starts galloping around me just in a circle, and she's giggling and laughing, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here, and why am I seeing this? Like, what is this? Like, this is, seems ridiculous. And then and I knew I was Christian. I knew I was Christian, but I didn't know what, it didn't feel Catholic. I was like, I'm not Catholic. Well, this is so weird. If I'm not Catholic, what the hell am I? And anyway, Ian says, okay, it's time to come back to this space and this place, this time. And I come back, and he talks, more about regressions and such. And I'm like really kind of confused, because I'm thinking this is like silly. I think he probably like, I don't know what he said, but it was just really like, this couldn't be real. It couldn't be me, right? And so we get home, and my ex-wife says, what did you see in your regression? I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't really want to talk about what I saw. Like, I'm kind of embarrassed, And we sleep on it. We get up the next day, and she goes, I got to tell you what I saw. It was so cool because she says, I think I was like a princess in southern France, and I was like on this white horse, and I'm pretty sure you were in it because I know I saw this like this little farmer guy in the field, and I was riding around him, teasing him, and you were pretty cute, and he had kind of long hair, and you know, she said, you know, and I was like, what? I said, what did you say? She goes, yeah. She goes, what did you see? I'm like, I saw the same freaking thing, like the same moment. And I was like, so I give Ian a call. I'm like, Ian, buddy, like, what the hell did you say? Like, what did you say in the regression? You know, did you guide people to like southern France? Like, I'm thinking this is like a meditation where they guide you somewhere. Because nope, I stopped talking for about 10 minutes and just let you go. And then I brought you back. And because I lost all sense of time and what was going on. And so I said, who else was in this thing? Because I got to call some other people. Like, were we all in southern France or was it just the two of us? So I call like a few people up and they're like, they tell me about being in Egypt or like, you know, Germany or Russia, et cetera. And it's just like, none of them are the same. And I'm like, this is too strange. So I did some researching and I found out about a group of Christians in southern France that weren't Catholics around the time period of the 1200s. They were called Cathars, you know, Cathars. And I'm like, you know, I'm looking at pictures online trying to figure out if this is real or not. None of the castles are right. I'm like, they don't look right. You know, this doesn't feel like, I just don't know why none of them look right. How is that possible? So we actually, in 2004, we flew to France and we took a bullet train down to I think it was Carcassonne. And then I rented a car and then I drove around from there. And then we were staying at this little place near Rennes-le-Château, and it was called Esperanza. And we stayed at right beside this little river place. And the people that were living there, it was an Airbnb, right? You could rent a room, spoke, you know, good English. One of the ladies was French, but she met some English guy and they came back and they were opening an Airbnb in Esperanza. So I tell him my story and he's like, oh, well, you know, I wouldn't bother going on that castle because that wasn't around in the 1200s or this one. And he says, but you should go to these ones, you know? And he gave me like six to go to. And, you know, Montségur was one of them. And so anyhow, we go on this journey of exploration and I'm hoping somehow something is going to like hit me, right? That, you know, this is it, you know, and I'm getting discouraged because everywhere we've gone, they just didn't align up. And we went Pays-Perpétues, and we went to a few others, including Carcassonne, which kind of seemed familiar, but I definitely knew it wasn't right. And then we went to this one castle called Puyvert. And so we get there, and I'm feeling like that this is the topography is right. There's a little valley, and there's a hill across the way, and et cetera. And but the castle is like all wrong. It's about the similar size because it's not too big. So I walk inside, and because everywhere I go, I look for like a tour guide, and I tell him my story, and I'm hoping one of them is going to go, you know, aha. So we tell this guy, and I tell him, and he goes, I know exactly who you're talking about. I'm a history major. And this is my summer job, and I know the story. And there's a legend about a lady in white in the 1200s at this castle. So then I asked him, I said, well, I mean, what I, and I told him, I said, well, what I saw wasn't this place. It looked different. He goes, oh, well, this is like kind of newer. It's been added on and rebuilt and added on. The original part is back here. You know, and he said, this is, you know, the original place, and everything was built on from them after that time. I'm like, okay, well, that could make sense. And then I look out over the turret because we were walking around and there's a familiarity about it. And I see the little valley and anyway, I get to walking down there and I asked them about, because there was like little square rock spots down there. And I said, you know, he said this was a little village that was just down in the valley down here. And it was like identically to the spot where I was standing in my regression. And there was a big field and the road, and he goes, that's the old road from Spain. And you know, the legend was that there was a lady in white who visited this castle and in the 1200s, and she disappeared because at one time at Puyvert, that all the he said this is predominantly farming community, that this whole place was flooded, so something got dammed up and all the fields flooded, and every year the troubadours would come and play music, and this princess would come up to hear the troubadours. And they would speak poetry about refined love and sing songs, and it was what brought her there. And anyway, at some point she vanished and she was never to be seen again. And you know, they thought that and after she vanished, the water had subsided, And the legend was created that somehow she had given her life or had fallen in the water and the water subsided. I don't know why they didn't find a body. I mean, it couldn't have been that deep of water. But anyway, she was never found, and the water subsided, and then the troubadours come back. So they attributed the legend to her bringing back the troubadours. And so I have a different scenario. I'm thinking that maybe, I don't know if this is true or not, but maybe she hooked up with the farmer guy and we weren't supposed to be together, and we've probably just ran off together. That's my thought.
Oh, that's nice.
Right. And then so I knew that I'd found the place. Like, it was definitely the spot. And then right after, we went to Prevert, not Prevert, Montségur, and kind of finished the whole thing off at Montségur, which was a very powerful place in itself. And it was like the final of the Cathars. And so, but I now know, because of that life and where I lived, and that I was a Cathar. I lived a life as a Cathar, and it was a simple life. It wasn't like, fancy rich or, somebody who's super important. And even the princess that I met, even though she was clean at one point, I'm sure didn't stay that way. It was more important to her, because obviously she was in love with love and poetry and all that. And, that spoke to her more than maybe being a princess. And I feel like we had a connection. I don't know if it lasted forever. I don't know. I don't know the rest, but I know we're together in this life. And we lived a life together before. And I feel that many people come in and out of our lives, and we may have different soulmates, that through different lifetimes, and some maybe come and stay for a lifetime, and some come stay for a season and a reason, and as the saying goes. But I'm hope she's happy in life, and I know I'm happy where I am in my current marriage with a different lady. And I felt deeply connected to her. I don't know which lives we've lived together yet. But maybe that will unfold in some time.
Well, and it's interesting too that sometimes our work is the similar as other lives, and sometimes we evolve it into something else. But in that life, the Cathars were, they believe very much in direct, unmediated access to God, to spirit. And here you are, White Eagle Spirit Talker, with direct, unmediated access to spirit. So that vocation lives on.
Right.
Working as a medium means, though, of course, you're often working with unresolved grief. And as I said to you before, like, now Spirit Talker on APTN is one of my like comfort watches, and I'm either going to cry or I'm going to fall asleep or I'm going to fall asleep crying or something like that. But it's like always in a good, sweet, cathartic way. That isn't to say there isn't humor as well.
Oh,
You very
absolutely.
often have like very humorous people come through and like really funny kind of evidence that spirits want to share. But particularly because you work in Indigenous communities, you are like intimately encountering the tremendous ongoing violence and intergenerational impacts of white supremacy and colonialism in residential schools. So, how do your guides help you process all of that heaviness, all of that pain, all of the vicarious trauma of engaging with people who not only have lost people, but very often it's a direct impact from colonialism? How do your guides help you with that?
Well, I meet a lot of people that have generational trauma, in different ways, from residential schools to sexual abuse, and even because they were raised by people that didn't even know how to be parents, or they were raised by an alcoholic or somebody who used drugs, etc. And that's led them to be in a different place of life as well. And I've met a lot of people that have struggled with addictions, even on the show. Or have been abused or been in residential school themselves. But facing that, I mean, the creator put me there to kind of help people as greatly as I can. And I feel like, because like you said, you watch the show. There's a lot of people that watch the show, and they're going to hear something that maybe I'm not speaking to them directly, but they're getting a message. And I think spirit's intelligent enough to know that when I give this person a message in this particular way, it's going to reach this many people and help them heal, even if it's not with them sitting in the seat right in front of me. And I just process it in the best way I can with the guidance of spirit. And I know I never look down on people in any way except with unconditional love myself, and know that we all have a journey, and I just try to help them to find a greater path through it all, no matter what they've experienced, and maybe find some healing or forgiveness or releasing things that they've been carrying for some time, because that's really what drags us down, and that's what spirit wants. So that's what the message comes through, is to help you to walk through life in a much greater and better way, as opposed to being, stuck in grief or pain or fear or anger, because those are not emotions that are going to help you kind of rise up in your spirit. But and through the messages that come through, I can see the shift in people. And I'm hoping that the people, through seeing other people shift, will help them shift as well.
What about spirits that are stuck? Do you ever do compassionate entity releasement? What about when the
Well,
spirit themselves are really stuck?
I don't really meet too many spirits that are stuck. I don't think anybody's ever stuck, even spirits. I think even in life, we stuck ourselves. Because it's our beliefs, and we're the one choosing to hang on to anger. And I've run into a few earthbound spirits, and they're not earthbound because anybody's forcing them to be there, but it's because they're still trying to heal even in the spirit world. And they've not let go of maybe the pain, fear, phobia that they've been hanging on to, or they have fear of change, and they're clinging to their old ego of who they once were. And I've been to many, not many properties, but a few properties. I've run into one here and there, and I've even got some recordings of people that I've recorded over the years that are still hanging on to their who they think they were, when they're so much greater than they know they are. And and I remember I was a Middle Musquodoboit. I wish I had that recording. I'm going to go back there and talk to her, because there's a lady out there in Nova Scotia that I'd spoke to, that I was out there having a fire with my ex-wife, and we were just sitting by the fire, admiring the stars, a beautiful night in September. And the last thing I'm thinking about is, like, having a spirit come talk to me. But this lady comes up and goes, "I don't like you on my property." Like, oh my God, startled me a little bit, because I was like, oh my God, you got somebody here. And they go, "Oh, that's so and so. This is her old land." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, but it," and they, I don't know if they think I'm joking. I'm like, "This is real. She's really here." And she goes, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "Well, what happened to her?" She says, "Well, actually, her house used to be here and it burnt down." And I said, "The house used to be where?" "Like right where we're having the fire." "Oh, I'm sure." And this is my humor. I'm sure she's stoked that we're having a fire right where her house is. And no wonder she doesn't like me on her property. I didn't mean her any disrespect or anything, because I have compassion for all people, no matter what level, in physical life or spirit, because there's a few that are hanging around for whatever reason. And I knew she was going to come back and talk to me. So I took my ex-wife's phone and I hit record, because I didn't have a phone with me at that time. And so I used her phone and I hit record, and I waited. And about 15 minutes went by and she came back to talk to me. And she says, "Tell that woman's son to stop hunting on my property." And I said, "I got her." And I stopped and played it back, and everybody could hear her talking to me. And it was like word for word verbatim what I said. And unfortunately, my ex-wife has that recording. I don't know if she probably will never send it to me, but she probably deleted it, trying to forget everything about me, for God's sakes. But but that's so is life. I'll go back, I'll talk to her again, and maybe I'll help her, right? And I'll offer her to help her. I can't force myself to help anyone. And it's just like in life, you can't run through Walmart looking for somebody to read and say, "Okay, I'm going to help you today." People come to me because they're looking for help. And it's not that I have to go force my help upon people. It's people who are looking for help will find the people that can help them. And same with spirits. You can't force yourself, but I can offer. And in my culture, what I would do is I would go, I'll go back and I'll bring some medicine. I'll bring some sage, I'll bring some sweet grass. And when we do have the fire, I'll make an offering, and I'll offer her the smoke, and I'll pray into the smoke itself that she can find unconditional love in her heart, and that she can let go of who she thinks she is and move more into who she truly is, which is that same light that we all are. And there's no, whether you're a person who has, like, murdered somebody, or even abused somebody, for God's sakes, we all come from the same source. And I, people need healing, and maybe they need to go through that life review and see the pain and hurt they've caused other people, but to learn about what they've done in their life. And that's a lot of the reasons what I feel sometimes people don't move on is because of the fear that, the repercussions. But the repercussion is really just feeling what you've caused everyone. But that's the greatest teaching tool that you can have, is to feel other people's pain so that you can know what you put out comes back to you. We're all one. We're all learning from each other, right? And if you, with that in mind, maybe walk through life in a greater, better way, and walk through life in a good way, as good as you can. And be mindful that, when you encounter people and how you react and or react, I mean, is, it's stuff that you're gonna see and feel again later. So you might as well do it in a good way this time, so you don't have to worry so much the next, when you're on the other side going, damn, I should have did better there.
So you've done pretty good with this career, right? You've got your book, you have an Oracle deck, you have at least 4 seasons of a television show that's taken you across Canada. I was so delighted when you finally made your way back west. You went to the lands that I grew up on, the Cowichan territories, and you met somebody that I haven't met, but I follow on Instagram, Jared Questenishin Williams, who
Okay.
did food with you.
Oh yes, I know
I
him.
yeah,
Yes.
Mohawk.
Yeah,
He
yeah,
has the
yeah.
Mohawk haircut, even though he's Cowichan. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was delighted when you came around to lands that I know well. But you say in your book, and it kind of seems like the end of season 4 of the show, you kind of almost imply like that this might be the end of the journey with Spirit Talker on TV. Is that true, or is there going to be another season or a different television show? And what do you sense maybe Eliza is guiding you to? What do you sense is next for you on your path? Do
Okay.
you think it'll always be mediumship?
I think so. I believe so. I have one more season of Spirit Talker. There's
Are you
one
going
more
north? Where are you
season
going to
five. I went, it was in Alberta and British Columbia. I went back to Vancouver and some of the areas. I didn't go back to the island, mind you, Vancouver Island or Victoria, but in Vancouver mainland and somewhere in mainland Vancouver or mainland BC that I visited too. So there's 13 more episodes to come for season five. They should be starting in October sometime. I'm actually going on Tuesday to do some of the voiceover for the first 6 episodes, me talking the background voice stuff. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to everybody seeing that. But I will say season five is the last season.
Okay.
And I just signed a 2-book deal with Hay House. So I
Nice.
have 2 more books that I'll be writing, and I have to have one finished by January 20th. I haven't written a word yet. I better get on it. And it's about spirit totem animals. And just like I feel like, that we have 4 guides that come at 4 stages of life, I feel like we also have 4 totem animals, whether they're a spirit totem animal or a power totem animal that will be helping us through life in different ways. And
What's
I
the
feel like
difference
there's,
between those two? Give us a little teaser. What's the difference
what's the
between a spirit
medicine?
totem
Well,
and a power totem?
the spirit totem is somebody who guides you more in a spiritual way, and a power totem gives you medicine to help protect you when you're going through tough times. So the medicine you can use when you're going through struggles, and I my indigenous name is White Eagle Spirit Talker, so obviously the eagle is part of my medicine. I actually have a tattoo of the eagle, and I actually have a tattoo of a polar bear paw, and I carry a polar bear claw that was gifted to me. And there's a story about that in the book, which is amazing, by the way. And I was also given a polar bear rug, a little piece of polar bear fur, and I'm still waiting for 4 other parts of polar bears to show up in some really cool and unique way. But there are different medicines that help me differently. The eagle guides me in a way through life to fly above the storms and find a good way in life, and guide people to see outside of all things in a spiritual way. But the polar bear, you sometimes you need that protection, that energy of that big energy to kind of go through tough times. And just because you're a spirit talker, a medium, or whoever you are in life, doesn't mean you're still not going to face trials and tribulations and struggles. I mean, I've been divorced twice, for God's sakes, and I've had a lawsuit that somebody took me to court with, cost me like $70,000. But it's tough times. But you get through it. And sometimes you have to call in the medicine of particular animals that are that walk with you to kind of help you through some of those like tough times. And what better medicine than the carrier polar bear, who walks through the Arctic in pretty harsh times and in all kinds of weather, and from starvation to like feasting to winter storms, etc. So that medicine is like helps me through those tough times. So when I need like help, I call upon the polar bear for that. And when I need guidance to, or need help to guide people in a particular way, then I call upon the eagle.
Nice. So the last question on the Numinous podcast is always about grief and rage. You've talked a little bit about grief and difficult emotions. Just tell us about you personally. What are the medicines that support you with the grief and rage you might feel sometimes at the state of the world, let's say?
Well, I don't buy into the dramas of the world too much. I see it. I observe it, but it's not part of my spirit. Like I say, if we're going to change the world, you have to change you. And then other people will change too. And the more you shine your light and you walk in higher level energy, other people would aspire to be like you or aspire to walk through life like you. Really, that's really what it's about. I even think, what the ascended masters, I mean, like whether it was Yahshua or Buddha, whoever, I mean, these are special people that have walked upon the earth at one point in time, but it doesn't mean you're not a special person as well. And you have influence and you have an ability to, shift and change the world in your own little space, and do the best you can to, make the world a little bit greater and better. There is going to be stuff that happens in the world. Of course, there is. But the more people that become a little bit more higher level energy, the less of that will happen. And we'll get there one day. It might take thousands of years, but hopefully we get there, that we don't all blow ourselves up, for God's sakes. And I don't think we will. I don't think we will. But I feel it's going to take time to change. We're still evolving. We're still growing. I mean, that's why we keep showing up in life after life.
Well, I'm really looking forward to your books, and I'm definitely looking forward to another season of Spirit Talker. I will make sure that I savor it, and I'm glad that it's going to be available. People can watch it on demand. Thank you so much for sharing your skill and your wisdom today, Sean. I appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you, Carmen, for having me. And I appreciate, the platform to share some stories and teachings, et cetera, because again, this is part of that, is to get out there and just be who you are and share what you know and, help people just see the world just a little bit greater and differently.
I highly recommend you check out Spirit Talker on APTN streamer Lumi. If you ever need like a sweet, tender, cathartic cry, but the tears aren't really coming, put on that show and just let it all go. You'll come away feeling relieved and reassured to know that the ancestors really are with us and guiding us all the time. And of course, we look forward to Sean's upcoming books, and I'll have links in the show notes for you to follow Sean. You'll find those links in your podcast player, or if you're on a desktop, at numinouspodcast.com. All right, the listener shout out today. Maggie from Mexico left me a note in the podcast inbox. Maggie writes, "Adore your podcast. It's so regulating, so informative, so organizing, a true beacon of light in a world that often feels like a hellscape. Thank you." Thank you, Maggie. I hear you. I feel you. And I'm so glad we could be in it together. If you'd like to leave me some feedback, you can leave me a voice note at castfeedback.com/numinouspodcast. And hey, if past life regression and working with your guides is of interest to you, in my online membership community, the Numinous Network, we have monthly intuition development classes, plus a large archive with hours and hours of experiential sessions, video on demand. We do a lot of ancestral lineage healing, past life regression, and trance work. Find out more about the Numinous Network and sign up for my newsletter to learn about upcoming public offerings at carmenspagnola.com. CarmenSpagnola. Until next time, take care.